Across the globe, millions are waking up from a collective amnesia. New generations are questioning the old paradigm. A radical new worldview is coalescing, fed by the streams of science, technology, and a reemergence of spirituality. The product of this current is the phenomenon of conscious human evolution. You're listening to Ascension, where we explore the fringes of human evolution, spirituality, and consciousness through the lenses of philosophy, alchemy, and mysticism. Welcome back to Ascension. I'm your host, Christopher Lee, your friendly neighborhood poet, mystic dreamer, and rebel philosopher. Still playing with those titles. I'm not exactly sure how to put them on or what shoe or on what foot each one goes or how I want to portray myself with this here podcast, but I think I'm going to stick with poet, mystic dreamer, and rebel philosopher for now. On today's episode, we're going to be diving deeper into the concept of ascension by laying a firm foundation, at least firmer than where I left you in the first episode, which was kind of just me rambling about the topic of ascension. The title of this episode is kind of made up. For lack of a better term, I'm calling this process mapping our territory. Because in order to know where we are going, we're certainly going to need a map of sorts of where we have been before as a species, as individuals, so that we can plot our trajectory into the future. This could end up being a multi-episode spanning topic, mainly due to the complexity of the task at hand. What I've done is kind of synthesized into smaller digestible chunks a vast array of information, including concepts in spiral dynamics, Terence McKenna's time wave zero theory, P.D. Ouspensky's ideas of the different types of men in his work, The Psychology of Man's Possible Evolution, basic ideas from Ken Wilber's Up from Eden and his transpersonal view of human evolution, and more esoteric stuff that I've read in various places, but probably the most succinct place is in The Secret History of the World by Mark Booth, which is an absolutely fantastic book. Check it out. And I'll be adding in some of my own tangents, personal gnosis, and much more from quotes and things like that. If it sounds ultra complicated, you're not wholly wrong, but I'll do my best to render this complexity in a more digestible format. But look, hey, who said ascension was going to be easy, right? Before we get into the episode, I wanted to tie some stuff back into the first episode and give you guys a preview of sorts into the kind of episodes you might be hearing in the future. Throughout our explorations in this human psycho-spiritual evolution, we'll be tackling multiple veins of thinking in order to gain a firmer grasp on this phenomenon. First and foremost, we're going to look at the breadth of human history so that we have a clear understanding of where we've been as a species, kind of like what we're going with in this episode. But along the way, we'll also tackle some modern applications of mythology to help us grasp some of the deeper truths that are buried in our specific manifested nature as humans. Stories are very powerful, and mythology has some of the best stories that are available, so we'll be tying that in. We'll also be sprinkling in here and there a more in-depth look at the metaphysical underpinnings of our reality and highlight the different features of the process of ascension from physical, energetic, mental, emotional, spiritual levels, and all the other different levels that we can tie in there esoterically. Finally, I will be bringing in additional voices to speak to their own experiences and to share some of their own expert understanding so that you don't just have to listen to me yammering on for half an hour to an hour every episode. Sound good? I mean, I prefer to have somebody else to talk to. To get us started, let's look to brighter minds than our own with a quote. I'll be doing this a lot within the episodes, so I guess get used to it. This one comes from the man whose name is synonymous with genius, the man with the untamed white mane, Albert Einstein. He says, "You cannot use an old map to explore a new world." Now, in the context of Ascension and this mapping of the territory, I thought it was an apt quote to speak on, because in order for us to grasp the ethereal coattails of what this evolutionary process is, we need to become better cartographers and chroniclers than our predecessors have been. What I mean by this is that we need to understand the territory in which we are operating, particularly if we want to operate in this territory in a more functional and sustainable way. For instance, if you wanted to go from point A to B, how would you do it? Now, today the answer is to punch the data into Google Maps and get in your car and off you go. But in the case of human psycho-spiritual evolution, we don't have Google Maps. In fact, the overwhelming majority of us don't even have access to, nor the ability to read a regular map efficiently. Look, this isn't a knock on you or me. Believe me, I'm 100% a slave to the technology of the smartphone era. But it speaks to a degradation of faculty within our society and, you know, current as well as future generations. So what do I mean by this? When someone asks you a question and you don't know the answer, what's your first instinct? 10,000 years ago, it might be go speak to the local shaman. 5,000 years ago, it might be go speak to the philosopher, Aristotle, Plato. 2,000 years ago, it might be go talk to the mystic or the priest, you know, a yeshua, if you will. 1,000 years ago, it would be go talk to the church, go to the priest at the church. 100 years ago, you might go to a professor at the university or to a central library to look up the information. But today, we're amidst a very unique phenomenon in which a large segment of the world is granted nearly unlimited access to just about any piece of information on the planet. For good or for ill, we have access. Now, if you spoke to someone like Isaac Newton or Leonardo da Vinci and stated that in 500 years, human beings would create a device that allowed for instantaneous transmission of the entirety of human knowledge into the palm of your hand, no matter where you're located on planet Earth, they would think you're absolutely insane or mad. Now, I can appreciate that there are limitations to even our technological wonders, even the smartphone. But what do you believe Newton, Da Vinci, Tesla, Einstein would say about such a power? Do you think that they would view the potential of our current world with an appropriate vision? What I mean is, do you think that when they dreamed or imagined the world that you just spoke of, would they fall into the trap of utopia? Would they see a world devoid of many of the problems of their day? I mean, I might, but our reality speaks to a very different outcome. In fact, many of the issues that were prevalent during their time still persist. Sure, we've done our best to eliminate a number of terrible trends, measles, mumps, rubella. We've largely stricken a number of diseases and increased the quality of life of humankind, but we're far from utopia. And despite the fact that we have access to more information than in any other time in human history. But then again, information does not always lead to knowledge, and it certainly does not lead to higher levels of awareness or wisdom. Some would argue, myself included, that this cosmic leap into the internet age has in fact dulled the faculties of the average citizen. Sure, the internet is awesome, it's great, and I love to watch cat videos, and I sure as hell enjoy the occasional meme, but has this era of technological advancement given us a clear path to the next stage of evolution? While many very intelligent people are leveraging the power of technological achievement for the function of creating a better society, by and large, the internet has become a place of entertainment and not education. One only has to think about the massive amount of misinformation that exists in the vast reaches of our best replica of consciousness, which is the internet. Yeah. Fake news, social media, meme graphics that are not fact-checked, just the fact that we have a Snopes is a bit absurd. So what am I getting at? It's not that the internet is bad for us. However, I will hold firm in the stance that the internet could be holding us back in more than one way. What did Albert Einstein mean by his statement that you cannot use an old map to explore new territory? What I want to attempt to do in the next segment is to lay the foundation of a new map that can help us understand a more holistic view of our evolution, from the personal, the physical, the social, emotional, and of course, the spiritual lens. If we can establish an idea of where we truly have come from, it becomes more clear where we might be heading. And if we understand where we might be heading, then we have a much better chance of formulating an empowered set of actions that can then propel us to where we want to go, instead of remaining in this autopilot, nature takes its course mode. But before we get into that, let's hear a message from one of our sponsors. It's just one of the ways I keep the show running, so bear with me for just one sec. How do we create a map of our past as humans? There have been two distinct methods of tracking our past, and I see it as one is through written history, and the other has been through oral mythology. Now, you see, both have incredible value in our quest to lift the fog of time, to speak poetically. We as a species have done our best to chronicle our journey as individuals, as tribes, and as nations. But the question is, why have we done this? What is the impetus behind sharing the stories of our ancestors? Is it simply based on tradition? Are we just wired physically to tell each other stories? What function does history or mythology serve, particularly in the scope of our evolution as conscious beings? Why did anyone ever think it was necessary to write down or pass on orally what had happened to the people who had come before us? I mean, many of us have probably thought, well, what is the point of history? This doesn't affect my life. How many teenagers out there thought that? Because has it ever really affected you whether or not Napoleon won the Battle of Waterloo? Well, the truth of this is that it very well could have led to you not being born. You see, our ancestors knew the value in telling stories and in chronicling what had happened. Much like our own body does with our DNA containing all of the information of our predecessors, our ancestors understood that if we wrote it down, it would come in handy in the future. Now, I can appreciate that not everyone is attracted to the study of history or mythology, at least not as much as a super nerd like myself. But I want to employ another quote to kind of drive this point home. And I'm sure you've heard this one. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. This quote is most likely attributed to George Santayana, a Harvard philosophy professor, and consequently a student of William James and Josiah Royce. The quote itself is not spoken literally because it's obvious that, you know, the Roman Empire isn't going to return anytime soon, but it speaks to a certain quality of human nature in which we are seemingly fixed in a state of rhythmic repetition. Civilizations flourish and fall. Societies become enlightened, and then they devolve. Even the nature of our own lives gives this dominion to a natural ebb and flow. We have our ups, we have our downs. But even though this quote rings true to some extent, it doesn't fully give us a handle on this gargantuan story of us. What is the story of Homo sapiens sapien? Which, funny, consequently means, in Latin, wise man. But if we're truly to be considered wise, I think we must first learn from the collective experience of our kind. You see, your DNA, your genetic code doesn't build your body without any previous experience. It does so with thousands upon millions of iterations of failures and successes. That's what history is to us. This means that we have to have a firm grasp on our heritage and our traditions. But how do we grasp the full volume of history? Well, we don't have to know every date or event, but we do need to know of its organizational or its functional nature. Because in this we find the truth or the key to our own human nature. Mark Twain stated it, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme." What we're trying to get here is a place of awareness in which we can start to grasp that history is one of our best tools outside of the scientific method to understand our potential trajectory when it comes to our future as a species, in our immediate society and as individuals. If we study the broad strokes of history and see a pattern or start to see a pattern, then it stands to reason that we might be able to extrapolate where we might be headed. And if we know where we are heading or potentially heading, then we can start to make decisions and we can start to decide whether or not to act counter to our more instinctual pattern. Now, to do this, we need to look at history in a more metaphorical sense, not as a series of dates and events or people and places, but as a narrative that explains our continued growth. There are a number of philosophical approaches and some scientific methods that we can take here to include a series of views that gives us a better idea. We can take stuff like the transpersonal views of Ken Wilber in his book Up from Eden, which is a fabulous read, by the way. We can look into the wildly illuminating take of spiral dynamics. And we can even start to dive into some of the often overlooked esoteric or mystical teachings of the world's cultural treasure trove that is mythology. See, when we combine these views, we begin to see a method or an intelligence, kind of wizard behind the curtain, behind these seemingly random events of history. I like to call this idea embodied philosophy or an embodied worldview. What is this embodied worldview? Well, in the simplest terms, it's an integrated human understanding of reality that seeks to reunify our psycho-spiritual self with that of the body, in the individual, in society, and within the entire species. You see, the issue we're trying to address here is this viral meme of separateness from nature. It's this single idea that has caused a fissure in human consciousness and been one of our biggest obstacles. This is where human beings perceive themselves as special or separate from the natural world, sometimes even considered alien. We don't belong here. Why are we the only things on this planet with intelligence? The underlying esoteric principle of this embodied worldview is the ancient axiom, as above, so below, as within, so without, as in nature, so it is within the human soul. Our existence is a microcosm of a greater macrocosm. Within each human body is the miniaturized version of the universe or of reality itself. It is also so when we look at the development of our individual lives, our society as a greater whole, and as our species. In order to understand our place within this scheme, we are limited to an anthropocentric comprehension of reality. It's a very human way of looking at things. It's kind of impossible to look outside of that. But this understanding has to happen within the parameters of the human body and within the parameters of human consciousness. I tend to think it's through three specific channels that we can understand our evolution. We do so in terms of the structure of the physical and energetic bodies. We do so through the psycho-spiritual development of the human mind as an individual within the course of a single lifetime. And finally, we can do it through looking at the mythic or historical development of the human species from Eden to ascension. So if we break that down, we're going to look at in each one of these segments on this series of episodes, we'll look at the body. What part of the body is represented in this time period of history? We'll do so by looking at the energetic system of the chakras, the Kabbalistic tree of life, or how it maps out onto the body of Adam Kadmon, the Hebrew idea of the perfect construct of man. We'll also look at the awakening of the path of Kundalini energy in the body. See, this is our personal map to ascension. This is the physical nature of reality. We'll also look at the psycho-spiritual development of the human mind, how our mind develops from birth to death as an individual. This is the map of human development as a universal construct for all humans in a very mental space. This is our mind. And finally, we'll look at the mythic development of the human species. We'll look at our development from the Garden of Eden to ascension along the lines of mythology, world mythology. This will be the map of our species as a whole, encoded in stories, and therein where we find access to the spiritual. In each stop along our path throughout history, we will address how history and our evolution is encoded into our own bodies and how it is reflected in our own personal development. And finally, how the human species has evolved as a whole. But to understand this more clearly, we only need to look to other attempts to map our evolution to get a better idea. I mentioned earlier Ken Wilber's book, Up from Eden, a phenomenal read, but he calls this phenomenon the Great Chain of Being. And here we can see that within each stage of our evolution, we build upon the past. We don't discard it, as we often do in society now. Oh, history class isn't important. It's not important. The German philosopher Hegel stated that to transcend is to negate and to preserve. This means that all of our previous modes of operation are still latent within our DNA, and as such are likely to surface again during times of stress. In this case, we don't want to fix our minds on an understanding of our human evolution as a straight line on a graph, ever ascending from the origin of X and Y. See, there's natural ebbs and flows, times of regression and de-evolution that resurface and clear out the refuse of outdated or dysfunctional modes of thinking and operating. In some eras, we progress towards ascension, and in others, we digress as part of a natural rhythm. Terence McKenna's time wave theory suggests that this ebb and flow throughout history and human development is a active intelligence, where evolution seems to be striving for periods of absolute novelty, meaning that there's a gradual and exponential growth towards something. What that something is, well, that much is yet to be determined. But there are some concepts we can look at to get a better idea or an understanding. And so I want to bring up the concept of spiral dynamics to give us a taste of what I'm speaking about here in this episode. Spiral dynamics is a psychological model that highlights stages of development specifically around values. This has a hierarchy of value structures that consists of 8 levels that individuals express in their psychological life. In this case, we're going to use this as a sort of decoder ring for the organism that is human history. So in spiral dynamics, the first phase is colored, all of them are colored, and it's colored beige, and it signifies an automatic or instinctive or survival mode. Now we can see that also associated within the energetic system of the body, with the chakra system, and that is associated in this mode of being with the root chakra or the muladhara. And it also physically is shown in the area of the brain that we're exploring, which is the reptilian-controlled brainstem, or the cerebellum, also noted in the endocrine system with, with the adrenal glands. So how do we map this onto history? Well, let's go back to, say, 200,000 BCE. Take yourself back there for just a second. The first thing that comes to mind for most people is like cavemen. You see, human beings existed in what author Mark Booth and other esoteric thinkers refer to as the vegetable state. In other words, before our consciousness had evolved into the hierarchy of animal states that would follow this era. This was when we as a species are in the Garden of Paradise or Eden phase, and where we would be living in a distinct union with the natural world. Our basic theme during this phase of evolution was simply just do what you must to stay alive. Our ancestors searched for food, created warmth with fire, looked for water, procreated, and generally just tried to stay safe. Basically, we were organized into tiny bands of survivors. It's kind of an apocalypse world. And in this time, we were very, very different than what we are now. This is where we start to find the Genesis myths or Garden of Eden stories in which a man and a woman lived in harmony with the divine and the natural world. That is, of course, until we, metaphorically speaking, ate of the knowledge of good and evil or the knowledge of self. Now, while I know most are familiar with the Adam and Eve saga, I want to illustrate that this myth is not simply a Judeo-Christian construct. In fact, the Golden Age of the Greeks is quite well documented in their mythological cycle. And this idea wasn't just limited to the Near East or to the Mediterranean. It's found in the earliest traditions of the Far East as well. In China, the great Taoist teacher Chuang Tzu, circa about 4th century BCE, tells us of an ancient age when, and I quote, "Birds and beasts multiplied to flocks and herds. The grass and trees grew luxuriant and long. In this condition, the birds and beasts might be led about without feeling the constraint. The nest of the magpie might be climbed to and peered into. Yes, in the perfect age of virtue, men lived in common with birds and beasts and were on terms of equality with all creatures as forming one family. Equally without knowledge, they did not leave the path of their natural virtue. Equally free from desires, they existed in a state of pure simplicity. In that state, the nature of the people was what it ought to be." See, this closely relates to our own personal lives as infants, before we understand or grasp the thought that we are separate from others. In this stage, we're locked in the energetic vortex of the root in the Hindu energetic map of the body, or in the Western esoteric emanation or sephirot of Malchut and Yesod in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. What we're also seeing here is that across time and across groups and cultures and individuals, the human experience and its evolution begins here in this infancy period. Historically, and anthropologically, we have a decent idea of what this life may have been like. It was obviously fearful, scarce. We had limited mental faculties beyond our instinctual awareness, and we only had one single drive: to survive from day to day. As a species, of course, we also had the primal drive of sexual reproduction, but nothing much beyond that. We were pretty much animals, simply without consciousness. As even infants today, we emerge into adulthood. We evolve from infancy into childhood, then into adolescence, and then into adulthood with its many varying phases. That's a way to map out how it looks historically as well. Even as adults, we have this history encoded in our DNA. For instance, when we are met with stressors such as paying the mortgage or rent, we activate this ancient subroutine of security, which can bring about some rather embarrassing emotional or instinctual responses. But ultimately, this level of existence or of human development is about security and a sense of belonging. You see, this was a time when we had not yet stepped upon the path of evolution that we're currently struggling against the tide. Had we not emerged from this mode of being, we would be very similar to our friends in the animal kingdom. Our only goal would be physical, as we had not yet emerged into the realm of the emotional, and certainly not yet into the realms of the mental, the psychic, or transcendence of spirit. This very humble beginning is the first bullet point that we need to pay attention to when mapping our territory, because it contains within it wisdom that we're sorely missing today. While we're far more secure from saber-toothed tiger attacks today, we are living so far outside the bounds of our mother, this wonderful pale blue dot in the middle of space. We've gone from living in harmony with Eden to a model in which we are fully exploiting paradise for the sake of our ego. Now, I'm not proposing a return to the Edenic worldview, but there is a lesson encoded within this story of our fall from this homeostatic relationship with the natural world. This fall can be seen as a negative in which we fell from the grace of the divine, or it could be looked at as an emergence from the darkness of animal instinct. This is where we began as a species, our spiraling course of evolution. It's important to note that at this time, there's no benefit in assigning moral judgment to this phenomenon in our history. The fall, as it is often called, is not a good or a bad happening. We should instead reframe our understanding of this event as the first stage of ascension. This is the time when we boldly struck out from our own infancy and into the next phase of our evolution. P.D. Ouspensky calls this the physical man, while Ken Wilber would refer to it as the auroraboric phase of man, and we might view it more colloquially as our caveman phase. But if we look at an embodied philosophy of things, we see that this map is both within our bodies and within our history and within our mind. Within the body, it's esoterically mapped in the chakra system, wherein at the very base of our energetic nature is this primal instinct, our root chakra, or the sephirot of Malchut and Yesod. Scientifically, we know that in the body, physically, it is represented in this reptilian part of our brain, in the brainstem, the cerebellum, and the adrenal glands. But in the mind, it's the stage of infancy, of automatic survival and instinct. There's no distinct sense of self at the beginning. And in our historic or mythic story, we're presented with our first story of human nature. And though most cultures have a paradise myth that mirrors this Western dominant Adam and Eve tale, we get an idea that there's a universal idea of a golden age, and we can understand that even our ancient ancestors had a clear idea of this evolutionary process we're going through. Now, before I leave you, I want you to consider the distance between our modern society and this infantile nature of Edenic humanity that we explored in this episode. Would this auroraboric or physical man look upon us as kin? How would we appear to him or her? How would they appear to us? Is there something about this layer of human existence that resonates with you? What can we learn about ourselves by examining the myth of Eden and contemplating the life of our most ancient ancestors? If we can do that, then we can see that this is our genesis along the path to ascension. I want to leave you with yet another quote. This one's from Voltaire, and he says, "We must cultivate our own garden. When man was put in the Garden of Eden, he was put there so that he should work, which proves that man was not born to rest." See, this speaks to this Garden of Eden myth, and that that our work is to cultivate a garden, either our inner garden or our external garden. And this is all part of that process of ascension that we've been speaking about in this very distinct origin from which humankind evolved from this infantile vegetable state into a more dynamic society. And we'll cover all the rest of that in future episodes, and I hope to get through them fairly quickly so that we can get on to the real work of ascension, which is a lot of inner work. But first we have to get through this mapping of the territory. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ascension. I hope that you'll support the show. There is a support button that you can reach here on the Anchor page. But even more support is word of mouth. Share with your friends. If you feel like you got something from it, share with your words and then say, hey, I got it from this podcast, from Ascension, from this super nerd and self-proclaimed poet and mystic dreamer and rebel philosopher, Christopher Lee. I'd like to also say that although you can find this podcast on the LifeGrove website, which we'll be launching here pretty soon, December 1st, the views and opinions expressed on this show are of my own personal nature and personal gnosis and do not necessarily reflect the nature of LifeGrove or any associated entities. I hope you have a wonderful day wherever you are in the world, whenever you're listening to this. Keep ascending, my friends. Before I let you go, before you get out of here too quick, I just want to say that I do want to hear from my listeners. So if you have a question, if something in the episode triggered you or you want to know more about something, you can leave me a voice message here on Anchor and I will get back to you in the following episode. You can also reach out to me on any one of the many social media channels. You can find me at Christ Lee, E-I-C-H, on Twitter. You can also look for me at my website, www.wildwoodholistic.com. You can also find me on lifegrove.org. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to hearing from you.